Welcome to another Joy 94.9 podcast.
Welcome to Orange Ribbon on Joy 94.9 with your hosts today, Hugh, Aline and Kafam. Tonight on Orange Ribbon, our special guest is a freelance writer, photographer and performer for the gay press, who in the space of 10 years has gone from Christian missionary to lesbian escort and everything in between. So stay tuned to find out more about the unique story of a Melbourne scene queen. Welcome to Orange Ribbon on Joy 94.9 with your host today, Hugh, and myself, Aline, and Kafam.
And Kafam is
not talking today because he's
apparently
howling.
He's not. Anyway, our guest today in the studio is a special guest from Manchester. Andrea, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Good to be here.
And we've got a special story for you tonight. So I think I'll start with, I met Andrea a few years ago, shall we say, and she described herself as a therapist dream. I think I'll start by sitting you on the couch, and maybe you can tell me a little bit about that and what it means.
Sure, a therapist dream. Well, I've got a few friends, certainly in Australia, who are psychologists, and whenever they hear a little bit about my background, my childhood, their eyes light up because as far as a therapist is concerned, they've got such a huge scope with me in terms of being brought up in a very strict religious background.
Okay, so let's go back to the beginning. Just what's the background?
Okay.
So how were you brought up?
I was born into a Pentecostal, evangelical Christian family.
What does that mean for those of us like me who are atheists and possibly described as fundamentalist atheists? Tell me what that means.
Pentecostal Christian is about as far up the Christian scale as you can go. They're kind of happy, clappy, hands up in the air, enjoy a good sing-song, but their basic beliefs are, in how they differ from other Christians, is that they believe in the gift of the Holy Spirit. So when you're a Pentecostal Christian, you basically ask Jesus to come into your life, take over your body, your spirit, and then the Holy Spirit can enter you.
So in your church, do you have a lot of music and people standing up and clapping and singing? And
absolutely. It was a very kind of happy environment to be in. I mean, that was the best part of going to church, was the sing-song.
Because you see, you know, some of the churches in the US and the black Negroes, and they're almost fainting and collapsing because they're so happy and everything. Is it that type of atmosphere?
Very much so, yeah. I mean, that a lot of Pentecostal churches are black Pentecostal churches. It's where a lot of gospel music it comes out of.
I actually did a little bit of research because I didn't know much about it, and I found on the internet the guide of how to become a Pentecostal Christian, and there's a few steps, but it also had a few tips, and it was: be prepared for a church service full of music, dancing, shouting, joy and hardcore preaching.
I've always liked a bit of hardcore anything, it's good with me. Yeah, it was like that. I guess in some ways you could consider, if you're going to be born into a Christian family, go for the hardcore ones.
So absolutely.
There was an awful lot of singing and dancing, and I think that's probably where I've got my passion for music and dancing from.
So how did it affect your childhood? What sort of, was it different from, did you go to a religious school or did you go to
I went to a state school, but as far as church life went, we went to church three times on a Sunday. And
three times on a Sunday?
Yes.
And then Sunday you've taken up.
It's your whole Sunday, yes, is devoted to God, and twice a week.
But surely the activities of the state school might not have been totally in line with the preaching or the teaching of the church. So how did your parents deal with that?
Well, that's a good question, and it was often a bit of a difficult point for my parents. So things like sex education within our school, my parents disapprove of that. And so I was.
Did you go to it?
Or? No, I wasn't allowed to. I was the only child in my class who had to sit outside.
For sex education? Well, you didn't miss much, because my sex education at school was pretty pathetic. I think we were meant to watch a video about sperms and ovaries.
It doesn't seem to have held me back in that.
So how did your parents describe sexual education to you then?
Oh, it was a taboo topic.
All right, so you didn't speak about it at all?
No, within our family and within the church that we went to, there was no sex before marriage, there was no masturbation, you know, sex was just not something that we spoke
about. A taboo subject, yeah. What about you? Do you have brothers and sisters?
I have three sisters, older sisters.
Older sisters.
And
so
they were all married by the time they were 20, probably because they were gagging for some sex.
But were they brought up in the same way?
Yes, yeah, we were all brought up. Well, I guess in a sense my parents were quite late coming to this religion, so my sisters had an experience up to their teens of not being religious, whereas for me it was from day one. I didn't really know anything else. This was normal life.
So growing up in a religious family, as religious as the family was, what was everyday life like? Were you allowed to do what you wanted to do, go out and, you know, have a good time with people?
No. There were a lot of restrictions. It was very strict in terms of home life. So when my friends were out on a Sunday, it was obviously that, you know, I was not allowed to go out and play, or we were not allowed to watch TV. Basically, anything that took your mind away from God was not allowed.
Because you were brought up in Manchester, now that's quite a working class environment, isn't it?
Very much so, yeah. Very industrial city.
So how did your schoolmates or friends look at you? They must have thought, oh, this is the nutcase from, you know, the family.
Yeah, they did think of me as a bit of a freak, but thankfully I made people laugh, so I was accepted in that way. And some of them used to come along to church because you used to get free lunch and lots of prizes and things.
So what about school parties? And I mean, I don't know, every Wednesday afternoon in France we used to have school parties where you go to your friend's house and put some music on and when you're about 10 or 11 and have a disco in your bedroom. That didn't happen.
If it could do if it was fairly subtle, but if it was an outright disco, I mean, my dad would refuse, you know, to let me out of the house or anything like that. But I soon became good at telling little white lies about where I was going.
So you did escape.
What I was doing. Yes, sometimes out of the window.
Do your sisters, do they still follow the religion?
Two of them do, yeah, and their children do also.
As bad as, or as good as your parents?
Not quite as strictly as my parents, but it's still very much a part of their daily life.
And your parents, they still follow the religion very strictly? And
yes, yes.
So have you been back to see them?
I try and get home once a year, and as part of my visit, you know, we will always end up in church.
Because you don't really follow religion now, do you?
Not anymore. I mean, I'm not a practicing Christian.
So how do they react to you? Do they know that?
They do know that, but it doesn't. I think as parents get older, they become more kind of mellow and chilled out. And because I'm so far away, they're just glad to hear from me rather than be worrying about my religious beliefs.
We'll take a break now. This is Joy on 94.9.
Diversity is Joy 94.9.
This is a podcast from Joy 94.9, a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station. For more content, please go to our website at joy.org.au, or if you're in Melbourne, tune in to Joy 94.9.
Welcome back to Orange Ribbon on Joy 94.9 with our guest today, Andrea from Manchester, who told us all about her upbringing earlier on in a strict evangelical Christian family.
And we have a message here. Oh my God, Aline, welcome back.
Well, welcome back, whoever you are. Who's
the lovely Rick.
Oh, Rick. Of course.
Thank you, Rick.
Kisses.
Kisses, kisses. But let's get back to our guest, and we were talking about religious background, and
we have to talk about that song.
Yes.
Yeah, like Jumping in the House of God from the Worldwide Message Tribe. Tell us about it.
Well, it got you all jumping in the studio.
We were jumping, we were rapping, we were hip-hopping, we were just all over the place.
The Worldwide Message Tribe, yeah, they were a group back in the 90s that formed in Manchester, basically to go around schools. It was with a subliminal message of preaching about God, but obviously through rap music. And I auditioned for a part in the band, and I got in it.
As
As a singer and breakdancer.
And breakdancer.
Yes.
Andrew's going to show us a few moves later on. It's unfortunate you won't be able to see that. But
too difficult in radio.
We'll put it to the test anyway.
Because you've got to remember, coming from Manchester, I grew up in the whole rave culture and the Hacienda. So music and rave music was a huge influence, certainly to teenagers in the 90s.
And how did that go with the teachings? I mean, is that not sort of contrary to what the message may have been?
I don't think so. I mean, it's not against any fundamental beliefs within the Christian faith. And it's just kind of bringing Christianity into the 21st century in mm-hmm. that sense.
So how did your parents look at it, though?
'Cause my parents didn't exactly approve, but by that point it was, you know, too late.
My dad is a professional breakdancer. Sorry, Dad.
No, they didn't approve of our methods, but the fact that I was still involved in church and still going out and trying to save young people, that was, you know.
Did you actually get a lot of young people coming to you and joining up in the church through it?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, music's a very powerful tool to use. And like you said before, in Manchester, it's a working class city, so there's a lot of kids out on the street or not much to do. So to actually go into their schools and generate this enthusiasm through music.
Do you think it was the religion that pulled them in, or the music?
No, it was definitely first and foremost the music and, you know, the euphoria of the band and getting involved in
that.
So
how many actually stayed once they got fed up with the music or whatever?
When they got fed up playing the same time.
Yeah. Did they actually stay for the religion, or was it just music?
I never really counted percentage-wise, but we always used to put out a message at the end that if there was anyone who wanted to change their life or if they wanted to ask Jesus into their life, to come forward. And we used to get maybe about probably 10% come to the front, and then we'd saw kind of one-to-one basis with them.
Now, something that seems to be maybe unique, I'm not sure you can clarify that, to the religion, is speaking in tongues. Can you elaborate? Because I still don't quite understand what that means. And I understand that you speak in tongues and you have an interpreter,
who's the
messenger, I guess.
Yes.
If I can say something before you answer, I actually Googled this today and I'm still mystified. I'm still kind of, I don't understand it at all.
Speaking in tongues. Well, it's kind of natural progression to being a lesbian, isn't it? I'm thinking of calling my book Speaking in Tongues. But no, in all seriousness, like I said before, the Pentecostal faith is based around the gift of the Holy Spirit, and how that manifests itself within someone is by speaking in tongues. So basically you allow your body to be channeled by the Holy Spirit and it comes out in a different language. Now, it's not a language that anyone's ever heard of. It's not Hebrew or Greek or, you know, any other nationality. It is the voice of God.
Is it a different language per person or individual, I say? Because obviously someone would come up, the tongues that you would speak would be different from Hugh if he decided to suddenly speak in tongues.
Yeah, obviously each person has their own slightly different way.
And each person has an interpreter?
There is a similarity in terms of the vowels that you're using. If someone has the gift of interpretation, they can interpret for anyone.
And who has the gift of interpretation? Who decides that they can interpret what it is that is you're saying?
Well, the belief is that God chooses people to have the gift of either speaking in tongues, and, you know, I was one of the lucky chosen ones, or the gift of interpretation.
Can you actually give us an example?
I knew that was coming.
It would, of course, be man-made because I'm not, you know, going to try and channel the Holy Spirit on air. But
why not?
Because that would probably be quite blasphemous and offensive to certain people. But I guess if you want the kind of sound, I'm going to sound like Eddie or Fab Fab here, but it's kind of like shandakaranda, shandalanda, that kind of thing. Yes.
So, right. So the person, I'm not going to try to interpret that at all.
The person who interprets it, how does anyone know what they're saying is what you're saying?
Well, absolutely. It's open.
to interpretation.
And
sounds like a good language to me. You can say whatever you want.
And in some cases, you could actually see it being abused within your own church. So,
and do you think it was who was your interpreter?
This may sound funny, but most of the time it was my father.
That's kind of convenient, I would say. But now, can I just go into your views about your upbringing? Now you've told us a little bit about it. Now, what are your current views about it?
My current views on my faith or on how...
On your upbringing, how it was brought to you.
Well, I didn't have a choice, obviously.
But we're going to continue anyway in a few minutes, because we have to go. And I'll take a little break. You're on Joy 94.9. Stay tuned.
This is a podcast from Joy 94.9, a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station. For more content, please go to our website at joy.org.au, or if you're in Melbourne, tune in to Joy 94.9.
Welcome back to Orange Ribbon on Joy 94.9 with our guest today, Andrea from Manchester. And before I was rudely interrupted by someone in the studio, I can't remember who that was, but we won't mention any name anyway. Andrea, you were telling us about, I wanted to know about your views about your upbringing.
Yes, I was cut off in my prime there, wasn't I? Okay. But I don't mind for Madonna. She can cut me off any time. Mm-hmm. My views now, well, obviously, I think the way I was brought up was very extreme. I do feel like I was indoctrinated, you know, from a very young age. I could, the Bible was the first book I read.
Was that the only book you read?
At home it was, yes.
But do you think that's a bad thing?
I actually don't, because I think it gave me a love of literature. I think, you know, whether you're an atheist, an agnostic, Muslim, I think the Bible is one of the best books, you know, you could ever read.
Do you think your upbringing made you a better person?
In some ways, yes. I think it gave me a lot of confidence. It certainly gave me a high embarrassment threshold, which has been good. Because when you're made to stand up on stage and sing solos and, you know, lead worship and do all of
speaking
that.
Tongues.
Speaking tongues. That's why I'm such an exhibitionist. Is it any wonder?
Yes, and we'll talk about that very, very, very soon. But you through that sort of upbringing, I guess you get a certain sense of community that's that you would sort of worship, I'd say, or need to some extent. When you left, did you feel that that was missing?
That was a huge loss. When I separated from the church, that was probably the hardest thing for me to come to terms with, because all of a sudden, this community, as you say, that you've grown up with, suddenly is no longer there. It's almost like a support mechanism.
Tell us a little bit how you happened to leave that community and why you left that community.
It is quite a controversial story, I guess. But we were talking a little bit before about the Worldwide Message Tribe music, and that was a huge thing for me. And I tried to introduce music and dancing in the church that I was at. And I got quite far with it, to the point where, you know, I was teaching 15-year-olds how to dance in worship, and we'd actually get involved in Sunday services. But
what kind of dancing would that be?
It was contemporary dancing.
Okay.
So we'd take a song like the first track you heard from Faithless.
I was going to say not Madonna.
And we'd basically interpret it how we felt God was speaking to us, but through a dance. But there was this one particular Easter Sunday, I don't really know what possessed me, but maybe it was a Madonna video that had influenced me, and I got this huge wooden cross, and we erected it in the church hall, and then me and six rather hot 15-year-olds danced around it.
And were there six rather hot 15-year-old girls?
Yes.
Right.
And so what was the reaction?
Well, most people seemed to enjoy it at the time, but then I got called up by the committee, as it was at the time, and told that, you know, this was not how we should be bringing our children up, and how it made some of the men feel uncomfortable because we were wearing skimpy tops.
Skimpy tops, okay.
So How did they interpret it? Did they think you were doing some sexy dance or something like this, you know?
They certainly provocative thought, dancing. Yeah, I mean, it was interpreted as a provocative dance that was blasphemous, if anything, to God.
You're listening to Joy 94.9. We'll be back shortly.
This is a podcast from Joy 94.9, a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station. For more content, please go to our website at joy.org.au, or if you're in Melbourne, tune in to Joy 94.9.
Orange Ribbon on Joy 94.9 with Aline Hugh and Kafam on the controls. He's not said much tonight, but he is there. And our guest, Andrea. Now, let's move on a little bit, Andrea, because we want to talk about
the other
the gay,
side.
Yes, the gay press. Now, tell us
the
what
dark
you do.
Side.
Tell us what you do with the gay press.
I'm a freelance journalist. I started off writing for Lottl magazine as a Melbourne contributor and photographer, and from there I've done some pieces for B News and for MCV. And I'm talking with Cherry Mag at the moment about doing something with them.
Okay, so what do you actually do? I mean, what articles do you do?
It can be anything from covering, you know, Amélie Mauresmo in the tennis finals to interviewing the latest film, interviewing the latest pop star or reviewing the latest film.
And let's talk about the story that you did this year in B News.
Yeah, it was March.
That was one of the greatest stories of B News, I think. and that was Andrea going undercover as a lesbian escort. And just please tell.
Yeah, it was a popular story. Apparently, B News was picked up off the street faster than ever.
I picked it up, dialed the number, and here we are.
I basically wrote that piece because I was intrigued to know if lesbian escorts existed in Australia. And if there was a need for the service, if people used escorts or would use escorts, and I was sadly disappointed to find that there were none. So I quickly got in touch with an agency who was supplying gay male escorts, and they said, well, why don't you do it? So I signed up, and I thought, well, this is a great way to write the piece, to actually be one for a night.
So one moment you're excommunicated from the church because you're dancing around a cross in a skimpy top, and the next, okay, well, we're looking at a few years in between now. How many years?
Yeah, about 7 years.
7 years, okay. 7 years later, you're working as a lesbian escort.
That's right. My father would be proud, wouldn't he? It's not quite the conversion of women that he had in mind.
Tell me, Andrea, what type of women use an escort, a lesbian escort?
It can be anyone from a businesswoman who's on a trip and is far away from a partner but fancies some sex, or someone who's coming out and not very confident about going out on the scene, or someone that just wants a hug and a cuddle and, you know, a chat.
Okay, what age group mostly?
Because of the price, that's a little prohibitive for younger girls.
So what's the rate? What's the going rate? We want to know.
Come on, I'm not a cheap girl here, but it's $2.50 an hour.
Ooh.
I'll pay that.
If you think about what you pay for a good hourly massage. And
yeah, which will pay about $60-$70 bucks. So the massage with a happy ending, I'll pay $2.50.
Yeah.
That's so, right. But you
so
said
if you want to call, no.
You said it's mostly, what, over 40, 50?
Probably 30s, 40s, most of the people.
And are they all like you? Because Andrea's, just for the listener, Andrea's a very slim, petite lady. Now, what are the type of ladies that you meet? What are they like?
Well, this is all part of the fun of escorting, is you just don't know what's going to be behind the door. So, I've had a few, you know, larger ladies.
Has it been a challenge in any way? Not because only of the size, but I'm thinking, not just getting away from sizes, but more what people want and what people, is there a menu whereby you go, you can get this person and I will do this, and that, and I will not do that.
Well, let's be honest, there's more of a menu for them to choose from than there is for me. So I can say what I'm willing to do, but I have no say as to who, you know, who's going to be behind the door and what they look like.
Right.
So you've got to be prepared for anything.
You have to be prepared for anything. So after that first experience, which was really you exploring what it would be and the sort of psyche behind it,
yeah.
You decided that once wasn't enough and that it could be a career path that you might want to take or something that you want to do as a hobby or maybe something else, I don't know, and you carried on.
Yeah, I actually got a kick out of that first time. And having written about it, I also realised that there was a need for it out there. So this is my service to the community. And
the same way the church saves people in different
in doing
ways.
Good works,
You were feeling that you were doing the same thing.
Yeah, maybe you could,
help people.
Relate it in that sense.
Other girls doing it now? Are you the only one? Or
no, I believe...
She's very busy and very tired.
No wonder I'm slim. No, I believe there are other girls on escorts books.
Yeah? So you started it and they followed on from there?
Yes.
Okay. But the demand isn't huge if you compare to male escorts.
No, that's
not
true.
Yeah.
I mean, we all know that, girls are different in that sense in the way that they're...
Well, they're just
active.
Harder to service the first time round.
Mm. Well, that's why there are no girls' beats or saunas.
That's right. It doesn't quite work the same way.
No.
So
I think I'm a bit of an exception.
So is there a point, though, where you tell yourself, okay, well, this is an experiment, because some people do it because they want to do it, and some people do it because they have to do it, or they feel like they have to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a point where this stops being an experiment and it stops being something that you actually want to do and you're thinking, oh, I need to get away from it, or...
Yeah, I think I'm probably close to that point where it's no longer an experience for me in that sense. So I don't need the money. I'm not doing it for that. An escorts have a shelf life. So I don't think I'll be continuing.
Do they have a shelf life?
I would say so.
I don't think so.
If you were paying $2.50 an hour...
Oh, maybe the price decreases as the age increases, but...
What about the safety factor? I mean, have you ever felt a little bit insecure when you're going to someone's house?
No, we are provided with drivers who wait outside for you, so you are safe from that point of view.
But once you go in the house, the driver's outside.
There is an element of danger, I guess, but that was, to me, part of the appeal almost. It's kind of gets the adrenaline pumping. But you've got to be pretty streetwise. You check out the house. You make sure there are no other people around.
Phone call. We'll leave a contact.
Do you do something for your safety? Do you phone somebody?
Yeah, the escort's very good at that in terms of keeping contact with you the whole time.
Now, I want to go back to, because we didn't really touch that, but go back to you leaving Manchester and leaving the church behind and leaving everything behind and then coming out.
Mm-hmm.
That takes a strength of character that's kind of unique considering your background. So how did you do it? Did you do it all by yourself? Did you have role models out there that helped you through?
Definitely no role models. If only I'd had role models. But I don't know. I was thinking about this today. I actually don't know where I found the strength to do that.
Is it the fact that you were thrown out that made you think?
That was definitely a huge turning point, because all of a sudden you're faced with this huge hypocrisy the faith that you were brought up with was suddenly shattered, because these people that were supposedly my friends are no longer wanting to be part of my life. So, yeah, that has kind of a knee-jerk reaction, and you think, okay, I'm going to have to do something pretty drastic here. And at the same time, I was struggling with my sexuality. I knew that, I'd always been attracted to women. I'd never been allowed to explore that. So that was going on as well.
Is that why you came to Australia?
It's one of the reasons that I separated myself, from my family in the church.
Because it's a big move. You left all your family in Manchester?
Yes.
And did you just come here on your own? Or?
Yeah, I came on my own, partly to make a fresh start, and to be so far away that I'm not looked down upon by anyone that, grew up with me in that sense. I was also getting away from a girl at the time, so,
so you're running away.
One of the usuals, yeah.
But you didn't go straight from Manchester to, you went to London first.
I went to London
and,
first.
And you basically came out in London.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
So how did that happen?
I got a job in London, and I was just really lucky in that I got in with a good group of people at work, and a couple of the girls where I worked happened to be gay. And I just started.
And you made a move for your boss.
I did, yes. It's true.
Yeah, straight to the top, I say.
So have you settled down in Melbourne now? Is this home?
Melbourne's definitely home. I've been here 5 years now. And, yeah, this is where I want to stay.
And what's your, what are your beliefs now that you don't have that?
I still very much believe in a God. I don't know what form that takes. I don't go to church anymore. I don't, you know, like, in that sense, I don't practice my religion. On a Sunday night, I'd rather be worshipping at Love Machine or something. But, but I do still have a faith in something, and I think that's, I think it's important as you get older. I mean, you look at Madonna with her Kabbalah, and you look at Tom Cruise with his Scientology. It's almost like everyone's searching for something else in their life, a meaning to life.
Andrea, because of your strong background in religion and your life now in Australia and your escort and everything else, do you ever feel guilty? Does your religion ever, do you ever sit down and think, oh my God, I shouldn't be doing this?
I never feel guilty about what I'm doing in terms of, you know, being gay or escorting or any of these things, but just the very way that I was brought up, I constantly feel guilty about wanting to make, I want to make everybody happy in the world, you know, and I think it's, I almost
well,
think
that's
it's
nice,
my
though,
duty.
That's nice, you know. Have you told your sisters and your parents you're gay?
Yeah, they do know, but it's not, again, it's not talked about.
What was the reaction of your parents?
They almost wanted to lay hands on me, and it was like I was possessed by some demon. I don't know if any of the listeners have seen that film or read the book Oranges Are Not the Only Fruit by Jeanette Winterson, but that was basically like my life. So she told them she was gay, and they...
Before we finish,
yeah,
one word of advice for anyone who wants to get out there, break away from their background.
Believe in the courage of your convictions. I know it's a scary step, but just take that step away and you'll be amazed at the community that will surround you, and life will get better.
Thanks very much, Andrea. That was a fantastic story.
Wonderful.
That's Orange Ribbon for another week. Our special thanks to Andrea again for a story. Coming up on Joy is the team from the Sports Lounge. Thanks for joining Orange Ribbon tonight. We'll be back again at the same time, 7 p.m. next Wednesday, with more insights into our GLBT multicultural community here in Australia and around the world. Thank you to Nick on reception for his help tonight. So from now, from myself, from Hugh. Kabam.
And Kabam, who Andrea. Hasn't spoke much, but...
I was dying to speak.
Okay. See you next week.
See you, bye.
Bye. Bye.
This has been another Joy 94.9 podcast. Joy 94.9 is a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station committed to providing a voice for the diverse GLBTI communities. You can support our work by becoming a member or making a donation. For details, go to joy.org.au.